Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Hackers and HackZen podcast. You're about to join Erica, Jax, and John for an inclusive cybersecurity conversation designed to educate and break the stereotypes of cybersecurity professionals while providing life hacks on how to handle burnout, networking, and goal setting. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Today we have a special guest and a dear friend of mine. He brings over 30 years of professional experience with him. I am so excited to have Scott Rubin on the show. He is a leader in the Department of Defense for federal funded research and development programs in the intelligent community and across the commercial consulting industry. Now, he is a prior veteran, which I love about him, and hopefully he'll dive in a little bit more about that. And today he's also an adjunct professor at Georgetown University. Scott, I am so excited. We are so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm always bashful when I hear any part of my bio read, so forgive me if I'm blushing and screwing up. But thank you for having me, and I'm just thrilled to take part.
That was only the tip of your bio. I could have gone on much, much longer. So what I would love for you to do, can you share a little bit more about yourself and your journey into cybersecurity, and then share a little bit about what you're doing today? That would be awesome.
Sure. So, and I thought about this because we talked beforehand about, you know, how I got started in cybersecurity. And I think it was an amorphous or sort of a gray area start. There wasn't like a hard moment where it happened. The point where I probably was professionally doing what we consider cyber today is when I worked at DARPA. I was on the staff at the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency in probably a more boring and stated role in the CIO department, working on internal applications and business systems. But I had a background from the military in encryption, which isn't really cyber. It's a piece of it. But a lot of people would hear encryption and encryption tech, and back then would associate that with information security and cyber. And through a series of things that were happening at DARPA that were bureaucratic and kind of boring, the question came up of how well are we protected on that front, starting with classified information all the way down to our public-facing website. And my boss said to me, I want you to put together a paper to explain to leadership on, you know, what we would today call our attack sphere and talk about our threat vectors. Didn't call it then. And I was wondering why I was picked to do this. And I went, okay, I'll do it. And I wrote this paper for the agency. And my boss came back and said, you're going to be detailed 180 days to run the office that will handle this. We have to stand it up. You're qualified, so let's just get you in there. Let's take you out of your duties and do that. I thought, okay, well, I'll go do this. And then I got stuck there and ended up my job. Not that that was a terrible thing, but it was at a point in time where cyber was being sold with fear, and fear was the driver and the heat in the engine that kept it going. And people would openly say, threaten the executives, scare the heck out of people. They'll throw budget at you. There was this idea that 2 to 5% of budget was good for CIO shop to send a cyber, some round numbers. I didn't feel like the space was very empirical. I didn't feel like we had a very good understanding of how to structure our approach and then how to bring people into it. And I didn't love it. I liked it. I got to do some neat stuff. And I wanted to move on. I wanted to go back into heavier system engineering and do other things. So that was how I got started with it, where somebody was actually paying me money to do it for a living, as opposed to think about it or talk about it. And since then, it's been an evolution, because I tell all my students, just like I tell all my consultants, that you never really leave it if you're building systems. There's no such thing as anybody today that's building reliable, scalable, secure systems that isn't thinking about cyber somewhere, either on their own or with their team. It's impossible. You'll be taken. So even though I'm not 100% cyber focused in my job, it's there every single day, every single concept, every single structure, all the frameworks that have been built over the years, all of the technical concepts that have been bundled and labeled and, you know, put in nice boxes, and we understand what they are. So it's there every single day. I'm never without it.
So Scott, with all that being said, you've telling us about your background and, you know, what got you interested and kind of like where you started out, you know, kind of fast forwarding, you know, pretty quickly to now, you know, you've found a way to help give back to those looking to try to get into the field, right? So you're an adjunct professor over at Georgetown, enlightening the minds of the cyber enthusiasts looking to join the field. So thank you for doing that. but one big thing we see a lot in this field, and it's even, I think it's really controversial in the offensive security field, is certifications versus degrees. What do they each provide their own benefits to your life, your career, and just your general knowledge? But I'd love for you to talk about, you know, which one do you think is better, if you do think one is better, or just, you know, what's your idea of contrasting the two on, you know, the scale of you should do this or you should do this?
It's purely my opinion. I'm not going to bring a lot of data to the table. I'm not going to cite a study. I'm going to tell you as an educator and as a professional consultant how I look at that space. First of all, I don't think either path carries a lot of guarantees and a lot of immediate promise. Both paths offer the individual the opportunity to explore some capability, demonstrate some capability, and then be able to say I've achieved in a way that others can understand. It's sort of a way of leveling the playing field, but they're not the same. They're not the same. So first I'll talk about education, then I'll talk about certification. Education. And I think it'll be thematic as we talk today. If it's done well, it gives the individual the opportunity to work amongst peers, you know, in the same struggle as them, you know, working towards some objective, whether it's the degree or the capability they seek to, you know, to put under their fingers and have it. And then it get this degree at the end, which says the school says you did it. It's not a trade technical thing, but it's a, you know, the student has accomplished the objectives that everyone said they needed to achieve to get there. And that degree has some weight. And a degree is something I always tell people, nobody can take it from you. Once you have a degree from university, it never expires. It never needs to be refreshed per se. It's always yours. So there's that indelible idea of that. But it doesn't mean you're done, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're ready. What I tell people all the time is when I hire somebody with a degree or without a degree, when I go with the degree track, I look at GPA only in undergrads and in this realm. If I see a GPA that's a 3.75, a 3.85, the first question I ask is, what was the class you hated the most? What did you despise? And they'll say something like humanities or music or some aspect of math I had to take. I say, okay, but you got this great GPA. So what'd you do to get through that? And they say, well, I didn't want to sacrifice my GPA and get a C or fail it. So I found a way to do well. I buckled down. I went to people who did well with this topic. I relearned a new way to take notes, or the way I take notes, I changed it. And then I got a B+, and I didn't even think I'd pass it. And it allowed me to keep my GPA where it was. I'm like, okay, that's work. That's going to be your life when you come work for me. I can't give you your major every day. I wish I could. I can't. Sometimes I'm going to ask you to do something that's outside the zone of either what your comfort level is or interest level is. But you have to do it. And because you were able to do it in college and get this great result overall, I expect you to do that here. And then as you perform, you'll get these great things that come to you that are in your sweet spot. You'll get to, you know, really enjoy, but it'll keep shifting. When I go to somebody who doesn't have a degree, I'm looking for incredible acumen in their field. I want someone that can beat me. You know, we're going to have this conversation about routers, and we're going to talk about BGP, and this person's going to stand there with 16 years of experience with an associate's degree or no degree at all, or pieces of a bachelor's degree, and they're going to be reading me the iOS Cisco commands out of their head and all these unique ways to build the fabric that's going to make this design incredible, and they can get it done. I'm like, okay, this person has this incredible skill. They're going to come to work for me, and I'm going to be able to turn my back and know that they don't need Google to survive. They're going to be killing it. So when I look at certifications, I tend to see certifications more in that direction, in the direction of the technical trade professional trying to establish that, yes, I have achieved these things. when I have to have that certification because a client demands it, and many clients do, they demand a CISSP or they demand a PMP or one of these. My general rule of thumb is, if you work for me on my team, you ought to be able to achieve that exam. If I've selected you to be here, if you've made it to my team, and my client turns around and says, I really need Jax to have a CISSP to be here. That's the requirement for tech leads. Jax, go take the test. I'll arrange for prep school course support and for boot camp and for test, but I expect you to pass it. I won't hire for it. So I won't be in a situation where I'm going to look at a resume and I'm going to hire for it. My belief is most of the industry certifications for people who are driven in the field can achieve it. And the reason I say that is I've met a lot of people who have a certification, degree or not, they pass the test, but they actually don't have the passion and the drive and the innate troubleshooting and the skill in the field to apply it. And I've got some kind of humorous anecdotes that I'm not sure if I'll go into here today about that, but it tells me, okay, you knew enough domain knowledge in these industry certs to pass the test. And that's got a value point, but it's not a point where I'll hire. It's not a point where I'll make a split decision. Similar with degrees, I'm not weighing schools, Georgetown versus George Washington versus George Mason, of which one am I going to hire on. That's not what I'm looking for either. Again, that's a different kind of skill set there. If somebody has, for example, a bachelor's or a master's in cyber and they have a project to talk about or a thesis that they worked on or a PhD and they've, you know, pioneered something, that's different. So I put them in those buckets and I understand, you know, to kind of close this point, employers and organizations want those certs and recruiters are banging on our doors for them. I get it. My probable big point there is if an organization is only hiring for those skills, I worry about what they're preferencing in their business. And if they're only valuing work that looks for those things, I worry about how they're chasing their clients. So I put certifications in a different bucket from education.
Yeah, Scott, and you always hear about certs, especially in cyber, like you were saying, CISSP is one it's very coveted after. And we talked about this the other day. Say, okay, you've got your CISSP or you have your master's or even a bachelor's degree from Georgetown. It's still hard to get a job. And sometimes people assume, well, I've got this cert, I should get a job, or I've got this degree from this prestigious university, I should be able to get the job. But that's not always the case. And we see a lot of times in this industry, we call it the golden unicorn of like that entry level job, trying to get into the industry and finding that job. So for any of our listeners that are struggling, maybe they have the certs, maybe they have the degree, but are still not able to get that hands-on experience. Yeah. Are there some tips that you could provide to them to maybe help them with finding a job to start building that hands-on experience?
Absolutely. Well, the tips I'll offer, I helped author a paper for the White House Office of Science, Technology, Policy when I was a MITRE guy. They wanted to know how they could amp up, you know, from an administration perspective, cyber hiring. And I think when I hear that, I cringe just like when someone says, like right out of a Dilbert comic, let's cloud that, put that in the cloud or let's apply cloud. And I'm like, I'm cringing like this person's going to give me a headache. Cyber workforce. So I ran into a colleague who was working on that assignment. I didn't know. And he quizzed me in the cafeteria, said, what are your thoughts? And I ranted for a couple of minutes. And then he emailed me and said, I captured your rant. I said, perfect. And then he sent it to these very senior people and put me on this call. And I had no idea what I was walking in blind, sort of like COVID style on a phone call where I'm not at work. And I had no idea there was some pretty senior people in the room. And they had written formal things for this paper. And I had written this first person diatribe about what's wrong with cyber workforce. But we ended up, I got the shot to fix that and clean it up and then, you know, get it into the paper. So here's what I said. And this is what I tell people, how I break the field down. I look at it in strata where there are different layers to what is cyber. And there are different people that come in. And some people can come in and operate at a very high level. And some people are just excited about the topic. They're excited about the technology and they don't know where to fit in. And the example I often use is like earlier, the person, you know, who knows BGP routing code, the person who could program an edge router or a modern seven-layer firewall out of their head and get it working in an operation first shot, because that's just what they do, that person's going to have the easiest time in the world coming over to cyber, because there's so much going on in networks and there's so much going on that they already do in that technology to make sure it works right. And that's where we know a lot of holes come from, right? Our attack spheres, that already, I already know how to do that. Now I just need to pick up end user security and some other ideas, but I'm a smart person, I can go to that. So I often find the people who work in high level enterprise networking have the easiest time coming into the field with a great pay grade, a strong understanding of where to go and how to go to work. I don't have a law degree, but I have a colleague who went to law school and he felt like the first year, every paralegal and legal study student had the edge on him because they knew the lingo, they knew the field, they knew the banter. So they didn't have to catch up when reading cases. He did, because he knew zero. And I feel like that's the same thing with networking people. Networking people can come in right away and just be applicable, right? And then we start working our way down a little bit. Now we move into programming. Being a great programmer doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be great in cyber at all. It means you have some technical skills. You've got, you know, skills that you can apply. You can take a problem, possibly that's amorphous, and then restate it in code. And that's supposed to be your skill, right? You hear the business need or the technical need, and you restate it as code. It solves the problem. So now we plug the cyber problem into that. But, you know, again, you've got a really excellent shot at picking up the concepts and learning about, you know, you can go into your field, secure coding. What's the latest going on in test-driven design where cyber applies, so we can make sure that cyber concepts are baked in, not bolted on, all that good stuff. And then we work our way down the stack a little further where there are people who have a technical compute skill. They've built websites. They've coded some UI UX. Back in my day, we would have said this is a person with visual basic skills, where they're not a hardcore programmer, but they understand the fundamentals of what code does. They're not a hardcore networker, but they understand what a TCP/IP address is. They're excited about it. They feel like, hey, I want to move into this space. They have a challenge. And then as we move down a little lower, the people that are coming out of any technical program, whether it's out of a bachelor's degree or a trade program, where they just got it under their fingers, they just became technical, and how in the world did they get into cyber? So I approached it like that. And what I say to people is, if you're coming in from one of those channels, it's best to look realistically at what's probably available to you in the market. And if we focus on the ones that are a little lower down before we go into the general market of just getting a job, what are the kinds of jobs that get you moving into cyber? And I tell people all the time, just like we described here, that cyber is not one thing. It's all of these systems. It's all of these capabilities. It's all these layers in this stack that occur, and we can get moving on any one of them, even on the end user. My sister works at a company that does in the phishing market. I won't name the name of the company, but they work against, you know, user phishing. And she has no technical background at all. And she's become amazing at social psychology, at working really hard to understand how users are tricked and fooled. That's her play in the cyber. And she's, you know, has a whole business. She gets a great salary doing that. If you look at what you're hungry about and what you're excited about, and if you're in those lower echelons where you just haven't got the chance to get in, I tell people all the time, when I interview folks like that, or when my employees interview folks like that, I'm looking for how hungry you are and how you're applying your energy and your time outside of whatever your day job is. Your day job could be, one of my students was a security guard. He had a physical security background from the military and from government and was taking classes in cyber. And he's like, I can't even think of anything I do that applies, but I so much want to be a part of this. I said, well, think about taking a shift with a NOC or a help desk, or, you know, if you can get a part-time job. And he did. And I said, you can take the leadership skills you've learned in your other field and start learning how it works in this realm with, you know, the technical terms coming at you, the pace of the environment of the troubleshooting coming at you. And as you learn what you're learning academically, so you can fit it in. He ultimately runs a NOC. He runs a series of NOCs. So he did great. It took him about a year. And it was really interesting watching the journey. So take what you already know and see if you can apply it. But there's some positions there where you might have to take that second job. Or if you're not doing that, this is where I'll go with the conversation. What are you doing at home in your free cycles besides, you know, show binging Netflix or Hulu or whatever you can get, you know, in 11 hours of a serial TV show? where are you spending your time? What are you working? What's your hobby? Well, you can get virtual routers, right? You can be, you know, taking courses. You can be buying Raspberry Pis and building things, building a Tor router for somebody. And when I hear that, I want to dig in. I'm like, okay, so your energy is in this, your heart, your commitment's in this. You're trying to find a way. That will lead to positive things. That will show an employer you've got grit. That'll show an employer that, you know, you tell the story. I know cyber's not one thing. I know cyber's a lot of things, and this is where I'm spending my time and energy. And you'll break in. But it takes time. It's not as, you know, I know it's hard to become a doctor, but you become a doctor, and then you get to go be a doctor. Right? You have medical. You hang out your own shingle, or you go to a hospital. I'm probably making every doctor groan, but that's when I think of degree to job, right? I have a lot of friends who are lawyers. I went to law school. I passed the bar. I hung up a sign. I'm a lawyer. And then people walk by and want wills and want divorces or whatever. It's not the same thing with cyber. Not at all. So that's probably the highest way I'd break it down of, you know, if you've got these skills, you can jump in. If you have some of the skills, you can find a way. And if you don't have that yet, where you're spending your personal time and energy to get sharp.
Scott, that's been an awesome breakdown. I honestly wish that I had a professor give me that rundown when I was studying. That would have helped my my transition into cyber be a little smoother. So for all the listeners out there, you know, I know that that's super insightful, breaking down the layers and the different career paths and how different skills can translate even without you realizing them. And I think that that is also a testament of, you know, true leadership skills to be able to identify, you know, strong suits that are transferable between role to role, even if in that employee's head or that candidate's head, you know, it's not necessarily something that they think is like a given. But in reality, it's really, really preparing them to take on that role. And again, that hunger that you mentioned. For me, it's the same way. I've always heard, and I've always stuck with the, you know, we hire for attitude, we hire for the character, you know, that willingness, that hunger to learn, because those things are harder to teach. And then those technical skills, you know, if someone doesn't have the cert, we can get them there, right? Like if I give you the materials to do it, like you mentioned, that's you right. have the willingness to push forward and to accomplish that. So I love everything that you just said. I want to pivot the conversation a little bit because I know that you are a big advocate for women in the cybersecurity field. You know, Jax and myself here really obviously appreciate that. I know that you also are a father of, in you know, your daughter's heading up to college decently soon. So with that in mind, you know, if your daughter told you tomorrow that she was going to pursue a cybersecurity degree, what advice would you have for her as a woman entering the field?
Entering the field. So I'll adjust it like this. I've told her, you know, a bunch of life skill things. I really don't care what her major is until she's a junior. I do a lot of consulting with students trying to figure out what to do with their major, whether to shift. And usually I want to talk to juniors. I don't want to talk to freshmen because I want to see her get good at college first. But but let's just say that she's really driven and that's her thing. What I'm going to say to her is with university training, university, you know, available learning is keep learning to solve problems and keep challenging yourself in the classes you take at the way you can solve problems and how you can work with others to solve problems. Because when you leave, yes, you'll have this cybersecurity degree and you'll have this hunger for the field, but the world is nothing but problems to be solved. That's what we're looking for. There's no other easy way to do it. So I look at that now with women particularly. I don't think I ever told Jax's story. When I first got to work at DARPA, the technology team was very male driven. And there was a pattern of behavior I sort of picked up where I would see this all the time is we'd sit down and someone would say, hey, the server choked, the DNS database isn't replicating. And now we've got this, you know, outage where half the enterprise can't resolve. And someone would say, what will you do to solve that? Did you look here? Did you try this? And you could tell that this person had some knowledge. But now it's turning into this little contest of I might know more than you. So now I'm going to play this little game of pulling you along to see if you can figure it out or if you're as smart as me. And a lot of conversations would go this way. And everybody would play this game of, you know, who knows more. And there were these two ladies, Tam and Laura. And Laura ran special projects and Tam ran our email system. All they ever did was collaborate. I remember Tam would say, hey, I've got this huge outage. We need to move all the storage. Who can help me with that? And then people would be like, you're asking for help. Yeah, I could use some help. Who could help me with that? And that was all her and Laura. And I would love to give them projects, love to give them the same deal, because they would never have this weird sort of competitive, I might know more than you, but I'm not going to help you attitude. And I had not seen that earlier in my career from the places I worked before that. And when I look at my own daughter, I see the same thing. It's funny. She plays Dungeons and Dragons with her friends, but she's so into helping them and helping everybody achieve something, as opposed to making her character powerful and independent and the best. I see the same thing. And I tell her that. I said, you know, not everybody will honor this and not everybody will respect that. You have to be mindful of it. You have to be helpful, have that heart, and be inclusive. Be mindful of those who abuse it, observe those who abuse it, and make sure you're dealing with that accordingly. But as you go out in the field, it's about solving problems and that having that attitude about, we can work together on this. I could use some help with this. Who knows how to solve this? Who thinks they know how to make this happen? Getting in front of the, I'm challenged with this. I tried this and this. So someone can say, well, did you try that? Have you thought about this? Get ahead of that. And that's the kind of advice I give her for that kind of challenge.
I think that is awesome advice. And I definitely love that she already has that innate, ability to want to help others. Cause I find that that's one of the really, really awesome parts of being a woman in cybersecurity is that women often do empower women in this field and we stick together and we try to help each other. And I would say that that's been true. I mean, I've only met maybe one or two that are the exception to that. And you know, that's normal, right? We can't stereotype. So I would say that that's awesome. And I love your feedback there. I think that we are getting to time here. So I wanted to say, you know, thank you, Scott. Really appreciate your time today and all of the insight that you've been able to provide. If any of our listeners want to learn more about you or perhaps even contact you, what would be the best way?
So the easiest way is probably my email, which is S's in Sierra, R's in Romeo, 1387. Strange address Georgetown gives me, at georgetown.edu. That's a great way to get a hold of me, regardless. Or my LinkedIn profile, which is LinkedIn/Scott Rubin, should be. I may have actually changed that, so I can double check. At one point, I got to choose a URL for that. But I can be found on LinkedIn just by searching for Scott Rubin at Georgetown. You'll find me pretty quickly. I can be sent messages there. I'm happy to help anybody in any direction, whether certifications, academic education, whatever.
Scott, you're always a great help. You're a mentor of mine, so it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you again for taking out the time and connecting with us and being authentic and sharing your stories with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great, and I hope you guys keep going, keep charging, and get some of the great guests. And if you need some women in cyber, I can send some of your way. If you guys haven't met enough, I can send you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
All righty.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Hackers and HackZen podcast with Erica, Jax, and John. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.